Carl Malone Draper, where you'll always find a huge selection, great value, and quality service. Visit MaloneToyota.com.
I have only five words for you.
From my cold, dead hands.
It's time for Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. A show dedicated to preserving and protecting your constitutional right to bear arms for your security and sport. Here's your host, well-known gun rights advocate and chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, Clark Apotian.
And welcome to Gun Radio Utah. I am your host, Clark Apotian. I chair the Utah Shooting Sports Council. You can get a hold of us at UtahShootingSportsCouncil.org, UtahShootingSportsCouncil.org. Not the Sports Shooting Council, as the media likes to say. Anyway, we have one heck of a show for you today. No, I don't have any guests. We may, with Jesus's approval, open up the phone lines. I don't know. If you have something exciting to say, you can always call 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010. Probably second segment, maybe third. Who knows, maybe fourth. But anyways, let me tell you. Let me give you a rundown of what we got going today. Oh, actually, before I forget, which I don't want to forget, our best thoughts, our very best thoughts for a complete recovery go to two deputies. There was a shooting outside the SOB, the Sheriff's Office Building on 33rd South this morning. And two deputies were shot in the head. They are at latest, they are still alive. One is in critical condition, the other is in stable condition. And apparently the suspected shooter has been shot. Apparently the gunman is dead, according to the police. But anyway, best thoughts for them and a recovery, and thoughts go out to their family as well. All right, so the Utah Shooting Sports Council is Utah's gun lobby. And so we review the legislation. We get involved in other issues like we had Gary Hughes on a couple weeks ago talking about a Second Amendment sanctuary for Weber County and Wasatch County and that and Summit County, I think. Not Weber County, Summit and Wasatch counties. And we're gonna have Gary on again talking about something along the lines of the county attorneys are now getting involved in this. So we've got some movement on there, maybe not good movement either. So anyway, so obviously, yeah, we're going to be talking about Joe Biden's list of initial orders on gun control. I have in front of me the fact sheet from whitehouse.gov, and it's called "The Biden-Harris Administration Announces Initial Actions to Address the Gun Violence Public Health Epidemic." In that very sentence that they put in there, there's cause for concern. There's cause for concern, and we're gonna go through what he's got going. We're gonna talk a little bit talking about the Bidens. We're gonna go and talk a little bit about Hunter Biden, and see, are the rules different because he is the son of a president, or at the time son of a candidate on gun laws? Should they be different? Should we just give them kind of a pass on things? Yeah, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about again. Back to the Biden-Harris initial orders, he gave his executive order, his announcement on executive orders on gun violence, so to speak. He also at the same time talked about his new ATF, or is, as Joe Biden likes to say, the AFT, anyway, the ATF's nominee for the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, anyway. And so we're going to talk a little bit about David Chipman, who is the proposed nominee, and see if that. Marco Rubio, this was an article out of the Washington Post, where Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican out of Florida, and he was interviewed on This Morning, and he said that none of the major shootings that have occurred in this country over the last few months or years that have outraged us would gun laws would not have prevented them. And the Washington Post did a little story. Now, remember, the Washington Post is owned by Jeff Bezos. Has been since 2013. He bought it for like $250 million. And so they looked into it, and they want to see, you know, is this accurate? And so I'll kind of go through the latest or some of the most prominent since 2012 shootings. And is his claim correct that no recent mass shootings would have been prevented by gun laws? So anyway, in the Washington Post, remember, Jeff Bezos is no friend to the Second Amendment or the right to keep bear arms. Anyway, so we've also got Representative Richard Hudson. He's a Republican out of North Carolina. He reintroduced H.R. 38. If you remember what H.R. 38 was last time, it's the same thing this time, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. And let's talk about the odds that it's going to pass the House. Let's lay some bets on that. Anyway, we'll talk about it, because with it comes a list of explanations. And why shouldn't it pass? Anyway, talk about the Nevada Assembly, along with Virginia, Hawaii, and New York. In all this hubbub over ghost guns. They like, you know, the anti-gunners like this alliteration, I guess. Anyway, they like this. So Nevada, New York, Hawaii, and Virginia are taking action on so-called ghost guns. We're gonna talk about that. But the way Nevada did it was so diabolical. So diabolical. Someone's calling me. I can't believe that. Stop calling me. All right. What about my wife? Anyway, Assembly Bill 286, sponsored by Assembly Member Sandra Yarigi, Democrat, essentially bans home-built firearms for personal use. And it imposed requirements that far exceed what is in existing federal law. So, and we'll talk about what a ghost gun is. What is a ghost gun now? What was a ghost gun that the media and some of the anti-gun politicians referred to back in the 80s? What was that? And a lot of people have never heard of a ghost gun to begin with. I mean, hey, folks, we know that assault weapons and ghost guns and some of these other terms are meant to demonize. Okay, they're weapons of war. That was another one. They're meant to demonize. And when you get to the term ghost gun, well, that's meant to just flat out scare you, because ghosts are scary. But you know what else ghosts are? Ghosts are imaginary. Just like the crimes that are committed with these so-called ghost guns. It isn't there. The Department of Justice confirms that. They do not have an issue with so-called home-built firearms. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about that. But we're going to go into the different, I don't know, four, five, six things maybe that President Biden got into and his executive orders. We'll talk about what is an executive order. In fact, what have I got? If I got that many, have I? All right, an executive order is kind of like law, but it's not. It bypasses Congress. It doesn't. It has no respect for Congress whatsoever, the legislative or lawmaking authority in the federal government. It bypasses the judiciary, although it is supposed to rely on both the judiciary. It's got to be legal. And two, it can't be against existing code. The president cannot, even with an executive order, power of the pen, go against existing law. He can, however, and that's why they call it an executive order, because it's different from the legislative or the judicial. He can, however, direct and mandate and require, without any discussion, well, I guess discussion, his executive agencies like Department of Justice, Homeland Security, the ATF, the FBI, the EPA, the whatever, the FAA, FCA, FDA, whatever. He can direct their attention to be placed on certain specific things. And that's what he did. And we're going to talk about, did his executive orders, do some of them go beyond?
Additional $500 discount at 833-ED-NO-FUN. 833-ED-NO-FUN. Put the happy back in your relationship.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Utah is talking guns. It's Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. Here's your host, Chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, Clark Kaposhian.
She was with the Russians too. I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Yeah.
And thank you, Jesus, for playing a little Warren Zevon, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, in honor of Hunter Biden. Dad, get me out of this. All right, so we're gonna go into. I know I said I would talk about the executive orders, and I'm going to, but I've got a little bit of time. I got to tell you about. I got to shed some light on the Hunter Biden incident and the hypocrisy that shows that gun laws, restrictions, and that type of thing are not for them. They're the whether they be the Hollywood illiterati, the billionaire folks, the anti-gun politicians that have the moral superiority, they don't have to deal with this, nor are the sons of senators and presidential candidates subject to the same. So Hunter Biden had a firearm incident in 2018. Okay, and if you know anything about Hunter Biden, it is not disputed that he is a drug user and drug addict. You know, I think he might be getting better, but then again, I don't know. We're talking about in 2018, especially the fall of 2018, where he was in Delaware, and he went to a gun store there, and he bought a .38 caliber revolver, on October 12th. Okay, and he filled out the form 4473 that asks you all the questions. Are you an unlawful user of drugs or illegal substances? Are you the actual buyer of the firearm? So on and so forth. So to get that, you have to answer no to the appropriate questions. On October 23rd, a little over a week later, Hallie Biden, who was the widow, who was basically his sister-in-law, the widow to his brother, and they were at the same house. They were companions, so to speak, it says. And she searched his truck. She searched Hunter Biden's truck and found the gun. And knowing that he was on the marijuana, he was doing the pot, and he was doing the drugs, the cocaine and cocainum and that. Anyway, she grabs the gun, fearing for his safety. She wraps the revolver in a shopping bag, puts it in her car, drives to a location where she dumps it in a trash dumpster outside a gourmet grocery store, Janssen Market. Just so happened that Janssen's Market is right across the street from the Alexis I. DuPont High School. Yeah, a school. So if you're thinking, well, that you can't have a gun, let alone dump a gun or drive around with a gun in a car near the school, yeah, that's federal law. So later that day, Hunter told Hallie, hey, I want my gun back. You have to go get it out of the dumpster. I don't know. But I would love to have heard that conversation. Anyway, so Hallie runs back to go get the gun. The gun's gone. Somebody had rifled through the dumpster and gotten the gun. So they called the police, and they called the Secret Service and the FBI. So they all got involved in it. So the FBI, as it happens, the guy that got the gun out of the dumpster returned the revolver. I don't know who he returned it to. I wonder if he went to the police or went up to Hunter Biden's house. Anyway, so before that happened, in between, the gun is missing, hasn't been returned yet. A couple of Secret Service agents. Secret Service agents are not the ATF. They're not the FBI. They're the Secret Service. They're involved in counterfeit money and protecting the president. I think one other thing, too. I can't remember. But anyway, those two things. They went to the gun store where the record was kept. The only record is kept of the firearm transaction to Hunter Biden, and said, hey, we would like the paperwork involving that sale. And the gun store owner had some guts, and he said no. He says he refused to supply the paperwork to the Secret Service guys. That would be really gutsy. Anyway, he suspected very strongly that those secret security officers wanted to hide that ownership, that transfer, and the ownership of that gun, the missing gun, in case it were to be involved in a crime, or in case his possession of the gun and his answering of the questions on the 4473 were found to be illegal, because that's two crimes, lying to a gun store dealer and lying on the federal form. So anyway, and you can look it up, but there's a lot of stuff, including even Joe Biden himself got involved in an intervention right in that same, in the fall of 2018, because he was doing the cocaine. So anyway, no, you cannot do cocaine or marijuana or any illegal substance and possess a firearm.
Come on, man.
Exactly. Thank you, Jesus. That was perfect. All right. Speaking of Joe Biden. So Joe Biden on whitehouse.gov says the fact sheet, Biden-Harris administration announces initial actions to address the gun violence public health epidemic. Did you hear that word initial? There are six initial actions. That's very telling because it's kind of a signal that there's going to be more executive orders on the way involving guns. This is just the first shot across the bow, so to speak. So anyway, and I'm just going to throw this out there. Right in the title, use the word initial, and then he says the public health epidemic. Folks, if it's at a 40-year low, is it an epidemic? Anyway, I think we throw around the words pandemic and epidemic way too easily. All right, so here they are. We're just going to run through them really good. So, as released by the White House, the Justice Department within 30 days, and this is basically an order telling the Justice Department, you will issue a proposed rule, as in the Code of Federal Regulations, to help stop the proliferation of ghost guns. So they're already saying there's a proliferation of them, of ghost guns. What is a ghost gun? Well, back in the 80s, a ghost gun was, if you watch the old movie Die Hard with Mel Gibson, yeah. They referred to a Glock 7, which there's no such thing. I think a Glock 7 is an entrenching tool or a knife or something. But anyway, the first Glock was a Glock 17. Anyway, so the Glock 7 was supposed to be a ceramic gun that could pass right through metal detectors without being detected. And it scared the politicians and the hand-wringing bedwetters so much that they came up with a new law that passed through Congress, the Undetectable Firearms Act of 1983 or something like that, 84. And that said that all firearms manufactured must have a certain percentage of metal in them so as to be detected by metal detectors because these ghost guns are ruining our lives. All right. We just can't have nice things because of ghost guns. All right. The fact being that even the first Glock that came out had enough metal just in the frame, let alone the slide and the barrel and the chamber and that it wasn't going to go undetected through a metal detector. But anyways, those were the ghost guns, and they used that term to demonize and to scare. Now, the new ghost guns are this. You are allowed, well, they're called 80% lowers, which means they are a hunk of aluminum. They are not a firearm by any definition whatsoever. Thank you, Jesus. By any definition whatsoever of the definition of a firearm under the ATF rules and regs, under the Code of Federal Regulations, under 18 U.S.C. 941, 942. Anyway, now if it was 81% completed, that's when the ATF says, okay, this is a firearm. So basically, it's a block of aluminum with the magazine well cut out and a little portion of the inside of the lower receiver milled. You still need to mill it out, drill it, assemble, you know, up to another 31 parts on that hunk of metal. So you're going to have one, some expertise, two, some parts, three, the expertise to put them all together and the equipment. And it costs money. And all of this, so, and the law says you may manufacture a firearm as long as you're not a prohibited person for your own personal use. Now, the moment you transfer that firearm, sell that firearm, loan that firearm out of your constructive possession, it's got to have a serial number on it. That's under federal law. So they're saying that criminals can obtain these 80% lowers, obtain all the necessary expertise, equipment, parts, and tools, and that to make that, and then they make this gun, and then they go out and commit a crime with it, and then leave the gun at the crime scene somehow. For some reason, they leave the gun at the crime scene, but they leave, and then the police find the gun and have to throw up their hands because there's no serial number, because it's a ghost gun. Seems like a lot of work. First off, not that many guns are left at crime scenes, folks. They don't rob a bank and then leave the gun behind because it was so heavy or something like that. Second, wouldn't it be just easier to have a criminal obtain the gun like they always usually do on the black market from friends or family, or steal the gun and then grind off the serial number. Hence, now they have a ready-made ghost gun right there. All right, when we come back, and I'm out of time again in this section. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the executive orders that...
And subject to change. Security Edge available when added to Comcast Business Internet for additional monthly charge. Call for details.
Protecting and preserving your constitutional right to bear arms. It's Gun Radio Utah. Here's your host, Clark Apotian.
And welcome back to Gun Radio Utah. I'm your host, Clark Apotian. There are no apologies on this show. In fact, okay, Google, navigate to Sportsman's Warehouse. All right, that should get a bunch of cars going there. See, now even my Google is talking about it. She says, okay, let's go. Anyway, if you want to call and complain that I just did that to your phone and your car is now going there, especially if you got one of the Tesla self-driving cars, it just, you're trying to steer away and it's just going to Sportsman's Warehouse. In any of the, and hopefully you're picking a Utah location and not one of the over 110 locations of Sportsman's Warehouse in the United States and I think Canada too. Hey, while you're there, before, if you can divert your car from going there, grab your gun that isn't working so well. If your spouse grabbed your gun and broke your gun, or if you want a modification to your firearm. In fact, we already fired 500 rounds this morning at 9 a.m. over at Lee K. And I, not this time, but a week or so ago, I was training some clients, and they had a problem. Their gun was malfunctioning, the slide. And I looked at it, and I didn't see anything. You know, I said, all right, just, it needs to be oiled. Anyway, so they're taking it apart, and they're cleaning it later in the day. And he comes over to me, and he says, is this supposed to be like this? And he shows me the frame on his semi-automatic striker-fired pistol, and it's got a crack in it right there by one of the rails. And I said, no, that is not the way it's supposed to be. I said, go get it, your backup gun, and send this one back to the factory. But anyway, what if you got a gun that is, you know, so far out of date or something like that, or you just want a modification to it, and you can't send it back to the factory? Get it over to the gunsmith at Sportsman's Warehouse. They can clean and oil the gun. They can do all sorts of Cerakoting and engraving and laser engraving and all sorts of stuff like that. They can put new sights on. If you want night sights, they can do that. You want... you know, a scope, and you want a drilled and tap for scopes, or a scope, or a new optic on your handgun or your rifle, do that. They can do barrel and action work. They work on your stocks. Yeah, they work on revolvers. They work on hand or pistols. They work on semi-automatic rifles and shotguns and bolt actions, and you name it. If you got a problem with the gun, maybe you don't even know what the problem is. It just isn't working the way you want it to. Get it over to the gunsmith at Sportsman's Warehouse. You can take it to any of the over 110 locations. There's got to be one near you. And I know there's like three on my way from here to Vernal. And which reminds me, Casey, stop stealing my clothes and using them as nightshirts just because they're extremely roomy. All right. So I was going to talk. Oh, yeah. Yeah. More on the Biden. Come on, man. All right. So he says they're going to get they're going to stop the proliferation of ghost guns, even though the Department of Justice says there really isn't a lot of crime with ghost guns, and we talked about that before. It says the Justice Department also shall, he's directing his executive agencies, the Justice Department within 60 days will issue a proposed rule to make clear when a device marketed as a stabilizing brace effectively turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle subject to the requirements of the National Firearms Act. So here, let me tell you what we got here. All right, so you've got a semi-automatic firearm. Let's just say it's an AR-15, but it was manufactured as a pistol. It doesn't have a stock on it. It doesn't have a stock. It has the long, you know, buffer tube that comes out at the back of the receiver, but it doesn't have a stock on it. As such, it's a pistol, and as such, it can have any barrel length you want. A rifle, however, that has a stock on it must have a barrel length of at least 16 inches, and a shotgun has to have a barrel length of at least 18 inches. If it doesn't have that, if it doesn't have that minimum barrel length and it has a stock on it, it's a short-barreled rifle. Short-barreled rifles or a short-barreled shotgun are controlled by the National Firearms Act, and you basically have to register that firearm. Cost you $200, and you have to send in your fingerprints and your photos and ask permission kind of from the or notify your local law enforcement agency and so on and so forth. And it can take up to a year, but it's at least $200 transfer. So Now, but if it's a pistol, it can have any size barrel length you want. So what they did is many, many years ago, the folks that were helping some disabled folks came out with a brace. And the brace kind of looks like a stock, but it's designed to wrap around your forearm. Oh, do we? Okay, thanks, Jesus. And wrap around your forearm so that you can utilize that firearm if you don't have use of the other arm or hand or, you know, something like that. It's not a stock, though. It's a brace. Now, what if you put the brace up against your shoulder? Does it make it a short-barreled rifle? No, it's still a pistol. I mean, I can hold my pistol up to my shoulder, and it's still not a short-barreled rifle. I'm just, it'd be look pretty stupid doing that. But anyway, so I guess the big issue is this. So whether people are taking advantage of that and utilizing, you know, bypassing the $200 tax stamp and, you know, and essentially having a short-barreled rifle or not, are there a bunch of crimes that are being committed with these pistol-braced ARs? The answer is no. Did it happen in Colorado? Yeah. Apparently, the Colorado shooter who decided to commit murder would have been thwarted had he not been able to to manufacture this pistol brace thing, because then he wouldn't have done what he did. Apparently, yeah, you can see the fallacy right there. Hey, I want to take this call. My screen is blank though, Jesus, so I don't know. Oh, okay, let's talk to Art. Art from Mill Creek. Art, are you on?
Yes, I am, and I've got a question. Tom said on Gun Talk.
Tom Gresham? He's a good guy.
The Boulder shooting was in a gun-free zone. That's the only time I've heard that.
Yeah,
and
what
I've been
was that shooting?
All over the media.
You have to remind me. Well, and the fact is, yeah, it's likely. I mean, many, if
well,
not
yeah,
most
likely,
of these things are in gun-free zones. But it was obviously even if it wasn't, Art, even if it wasn't in a gun-free zone, the Boulder shooter, which I'm trying to remember, was it in a mall or where was that at?
A grocery store.
So apparently the grocery store had said no guns allowed, and private businesses can do that. And but I can tell you this: it may or may not have been a gun-free zone, but I can guarantee you it was a murder-free zone. You weren't supposed to commit murder in that store. I'm sure they had a rule against it. If not there in the city by ordinance or by the state, and yet we find the person did it anyway. What we need are even more laws.
If you want to make a gun-free zone,
yeah,
you should be responsible for the safety of anybody that's in that gun-free zone.
Now that's an interesting concept. I like that. So if you're going to say we've got a place of public accommodation and the public sometimes carries guns, but we're not going to allow that certain segment of the population to enjoy this place of public accommodation, and instead we're going to deny you your right, your effective tools to protect yourself. And right now they're saying we're going to do that, but we have no liability should you do get hurt. And you're saying they should have a little liability if they want to go there. Is that right?
When they had that meeting from the kids, you know, Walk for Our Lives or
March for Our Lives, yeah,
Our Lives, March for Our Lives. I went to that, and you got you went through a metal detector, and the security was quite tight. And I, you know, of course, left my gun at home, and I was talking to a security guard who was had been a policeman. I said, don't you feel a little bit out in the wind not being armed? He says, well, you notice I'm really close to the cops that are armed.
Okay, so Art, I got to tell you this. I was at that same March for Our Lives thing over at the Southtown. It was the Mountain America Credit Union now, Expo Center. I was at the same one, and I went there with Bill Pedersen, my co-host. And guess what? And the security was tight, and I did go through the metal detector. But guess what? I carried a gun in. They didn't know it. Yeah, I got a gun in. I got a gun in through their strict security. Did I commit a crime? No, I didn't. Did I violate their rules? Yeah, but you don't get in trouble for a lie. They could have told me to leave. But they didn't know about it because it was a secret. And I went through the same metal detector you did, and had, or the same wanding and that kind of stuff, and it beeped, but they dismissed it. They said, oh, it must be your belt buckle. Anyway, and I don't mind saying that, because I could care less what their little rules are, because I didn't commit a crime. Anyways, and there we have the fallacy of even gun-free zones with that. Hey, the Jazz, I've been to the Jazz games, and they wanded you, and I still got in.
You probably heard me speak about, you know, my mother and father were both shot by an 11-year-old.
I want to hear this, Art, but we've got like 15 seconds, and I don't think that's enough time. Can you promise
here to pay? It's part of the heritage of Morgan Jewelers that Chase and I proudly carry on at morganjewelers.com.
Protecting and preserving your constitutional right to bear arms. It's Gun Radio Utah on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Here's your host, Clark Kaposian.
Now, welcome back to Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. All right, we're going to continue because time is short, and I need to go over a few more things with Joe Biden's executive orders. All right, the second one was that in name, the Justice Department will, within 60 days, issue a proposed rule to make it clear that a stabilizing brace turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle, which are subject to the NFA and $200 and registration and photographs, fingerprints, so on and so forth, and probably a one-year wait. There are, I'll bet you, hundreds of thousands of those things out there. I have some. Am I going to have to go to court again and be the last person in America to own a stabilizing brace? I don't know. Anyway, so the ATF has been hinting about doing that since before Biden was even sworn in. In fact, they had floated some proposed rules and that, and they announced them, then they withdrew them, and so on and so forth. But basically, they're going to, you know, they're saying that the braces turn a AR-15 pistol into a short-barreled rifle. And if you violate that, you've got a potential 10-year federal prison sentence if you have an unregistered short-barreled rifle. All right. He goes on. He says the Justice Department shall, within 60 days, publish model red flag legislation for states. Now, Biden cannot enact extreme risk protection orders or what we call confiscation orders to all the states, but he can try to incentivize states to do that, and that's what he's talking about. And he's hoping that that they will adopt this, and he'll throw money at them probably or something like that. I can guarantee this: it's not going to have due process. One of the main things involved in these gun confiscation orders or so-called red flag laws is no due process. Further, we already have existing laws. I bet there isn't a state out there that doesn't have an existing law that says, you know, if somebody is mentally deficient or somebody is making threats, somebody is doing this. I mean, that especially up to the order of the examples that the red flag folks have given us, that they wouldn't be already committing a crime. And we're talking about confiscating a gun. That's all it is. It's not getting them any help. It's not addressing the overall issue. There is no metric or standard for what constitutes the eligibility for a red flag, confiscation red flag order. There is, make no mistake, the person is not suspected of or having been convicted or committing a crime. They're not suspected of committing a crime at all. And until the red flag order is issued and they possess a gun, then they're a federal felon. They didn't commit a crime. Red flag order is issued, no metric or standard for what that takes, and then they have a gun or even a round of ammunition, and they're a federal felon. All right, so as you can tell, I do have a problem with those. All right, they talk about the administration wants to invest in evidence-based community violence interventions. All right, you want to stop some community violence? Stop these bail reform things where they're letting criminals out of jail. That might be a good idea. And, you know, keep them in jail, arrest them, prosecute them, incarcerate them, and then keep them there. But these bail reform things, not good. We have this in Utah. There's some things and some legislation happened last year. So stay on top of that. And we've got the Justice Department is now required to issue an annual report on firearms trafficking. I'll bet you anything that they come out and say, we need a one gun a month program. All right. Further, I talked about this. This isn't one of the executive orders, but he has chosen a nominee to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. And his name is David Chipman. David Chipman, he was an agent with the ATF for 25 years, from 88 to 2012. After that, he went with the Bloomberg-founded Mayors Against Illegal Guns. He advocated for assault weapon bans, so-called assault weapons, semi-automatic firearm bans, magazine capacity restrictions, and so on and so forth. He's been, since 2016, he's been a senior policy advisor for one of the biggest hand-wringing bedwetting associations, the Gifford Anti-Gun Campaign. And in 2019, he told the U.S. House Committee, simply reinstating the 90s-era assault weapon ban is not enough. Instead, we should regulate a broader class of firearms, including assault weapons, manufactured before the law's enactment, while banning the future manufacture and sale of these firearms. This is the guy that Biden wants to head the Enforcement Bureau for all firearms, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms thing. And they always forget about the alcohol and the tobacco. Although I was traveling through Washington, and I saw a gun store that also sold alcohol and cigarettes. And I said, oh my gosh, you've got the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms store right there. Anyway, not a good thing. Contact your senator. They're the ones that are going to either approve the nomination or not. Contact your senator and say, we need somebody. You know, it doesn't have to be completely nonpartisan. We don't expect that. But my gosh, somebody has a preconceived notion that all guns are bad, or that to simply set that one of the most popular, in fact, not of one of, but the most popular semi-automatic firearm or firearm that has ever been in the United States, 16 million of them, is somehow an assault weapon, even though, considering all rifles of any kind, not just semi-automatic and not just the smaller subset of AR-15s, they're involved in less than 1% of gun crime out there. And somehow, when bad people use them, all people can't use them. All right. So anyway, again, our best thoughts go to the family, and especially the individual, the two deputies that were shot this morning in Salt Lake. The gunman is dead. I have no apologies for that whatsoever, but our best thoughts go out to those two deputies, and hope they recover and recover quickly. So, all right, we got a minute. All right, so Marco Rubio here. I'll give you a quick little thing here. Marco Rubio has a claim that no recent mass shootings would have been prevented by gun laws, and it was out of the Washington Post. Yeah, they looked at 12. The most recent 12 of them, they go back to also to 2012, and it finds out that, read that last one. They said, this is certainly a depressing chronicle of death and tragedy, but Rubio's statement stands up to scrutiny. They looked at every one of these things and found that even if the proposed gun laws, that all the proposed gun laws that the hand-wringing bedwetters wanted would not have prevented them. All right, folks, thanks for listening to Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. You can also catch it on podcast, iHeart.com/media. Tell your friends. Till next week. Stay safe. Go shooting and clean up after yourself.